This is the November 24 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Bill Biederman of AgMarket.net out of Spring City, Tennessee. Garrett Toy joins us from Stockton, Illinois and AgTraderTalk.com. And Mike Suslo is here from GlobalComResearch.com in Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. And just a quick reminder that right now you will find a link to the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. The FarmDoc team, the Ag Economist, and I will be hosting a series of five webinars, 1 hour long, 11 a.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, beginning next Monday, the 29th, and then on Monday and Friday of the following week. You can find all the details at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu or at willag.org. Two ways, one in the calendar, the other is that there is a direct link to the registration page. Please do get yourself registered. It's absolutely free. Those begin next Monday at 11 a.m., and it's just 1 hour long. Now, let's get a list of items that we should talk about today as it relates to the marketplace. I think, Garrett Toy, we'll start with you. What's on your list?
I'm just watching this crude SPR release and what that does for so we see a sustained rally in crude from this point forward, what that does for demand in this economy, or if it should happen to create some issues for this economy. Along that, obviously, at what point does the EPA make a decision on REVOs and ethanol demand? Because that is really the ethanol demand is absolutely fantastic right now. And I do think we're in the middle of a demand market in the corn market, not so much in the beans. But where can we see export demand start to pick up here into the first quarter or not?
Bill Biederman, your list, please.
Well, I think the market's dealing with a lot of weather concerns in the wheat growing regions of the world, and that's affecting the attitude of the trader. 2022 acreage is certainly going to be the biggest book on the table to be reading through, and that's obviously going to be impacted by fertilizer. And then, of course, in the big macro picture, the complexity of fiscal policy and inflation and the impact that that will have on traders' minds.
And Mike Zuzulo.
I think the only thing to add to what the other two guys said, Todd, is the biggest unknown known out there is China. It gets more and more difficult to know where they're going to be in terms of their demand for our products as we get deeper into 2022, it seems to me. So unlike 2021, I think 2022 is going to be a lot tougher when it comes to Chinese demand forecasting.
Just as a reminder, we are recording this edition of Commodity Week prior to Thanksgiving. I hope you've had a great holiday, by the way. So that would be on Wednesday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo, I'd like you to give me kind of your view of the landscape of the trade through the close on Wednesday in Chicago.
I think the biggest thing that I saw Wednesday, because we had been and continue to be following the European wheat market so closely because in part of Australia and also the buying pattern that we've seen pick up dramatically in the Middle Eastern countries, Todd, that when we saw a correction in Paris and at the European exchanges, I think the market really took note of the dollar continuing to go higher as we went into the Federal Reserve minutes, as we got closer to the close. So a pullback in the soft red wheat was not a surprise. It's really been about spring wheat and the protein and now the hard red wheat as we get into more of the winter wheat issues. So the soft red wheat to me is not unhealthy to see a pullback. Now, if we would see another 30-cent loss coming in on Friday after the holiday, that would concern me because Wednesday did see some good volume in soft red wheat. So that liquidation pressure was substantially strong in terms of volume levels. But that to me kind of carried 80% of the market weight, other than some of the exports released to Mexico and corn, soybeans and unknown. And then later in the day, we found out that India came in and bought some U.S. soybean oil.
And just as a reminder, the soft red winter wheat dropping 18 and 19 cents on Wednesday, but the hard red, Bill Biederman, was only down a nickel. You have wheat as a concern as well around the planet, and what that might do for lifting the marketplace, I suppose. You know, there was this move back in the soft red, which often gets traded as the global marketplace. How do you see it?
Well, Todd, I think what's happening is we're starting to, you know, the U.S. is the last market on the totem pole for buyers to come to in the wheat market. We're the storehouse of the world. We're not the storefront, so to speak, of the world. But just the way things are priced and structured, we are becoming more competitive. We're still very high relative to other locations when you figure FOB delivery cost. But we are definitely getting more attention as these other supplies simply just don't make quality grade, or the question mark of what percentage of their crop will make millable wheat. So we're seeing the Kansas City value relative to other classes of wheat starting to gain. We suspect that a normal premium for Kansas City over Chicago is 40 to 50 cents. We've been trading at a huge discount for almost 2 years. We're headed back, we believe, to not just the normal price, but maybe back up to those extreme highs that we've seen about five other times in history. Kansas City wheat, it's realistic to think that we could trade 80 over, maybe even a dollar over Chicago. So we'll be watching that spread pretty close as world buyers start to nose around in the U.S. market.
Any concerns that you might have, Garrett Toy, that demand destruction might take place at some point, sooner rather than later, within the wheat system across the planet?
I mean, it's always an underlying concern, but I think the biggest problem is end users have kind of slow to come to the market. And I think a lot of these end users remain undercovered. I mean, if you look even, you've got to remember, you got to differentiate, gas, soft red wheat purchases, the Russian export limitations, but, gas is about 1 million metric ton less bought than where they were at this point last year. But, this hard red wheat market is largely a function of the Australian quality concerns. Quite a bit of harvest down there that remains unharvested. And with these rains in the forecast, that's why the hard red's gaining on soft red. The soft red market, in reality, we kind of, it's a liquidity issue because of, it's easier to throw money into the Chicago wheat market because it's a little bit bigger market than KC. But this last week or so, the soft red wheat market kind of overheated. I mean, we've really seen soft red wheat FOB values widened to nearly $15-$20 a ton, more expensive than their counterparts. So as Afer mentioned, a correction is to be expected. But I mean it's always in the back of your concerns. I mean, I find it interesting that there was at least on the weekly candle here, pretty aggressive selling above the 850 level in Chicago wheat, soft red wheat. So that kind of is the line in the sand, because that's that area of resistance from those 2000, the bottom end of the 2012 trading range in that weekly December contract. So I do think ultimately I agree with Bill. I mean, it's we're trading in that position as long KC versus Chicago here near term. It closed in the December here towards 35 cents. And in the last 2 years, especially with the introduction of the VSR and hard red wheat, the market has struggled to maintain those historical relationships that we'd had prior to the introduction of the VSR.
Mike, any follow-up on demand for wheat?
Yeah, I mean, to get to your original question, I think we are rationing demand, Todd. I think just from a standpoint of the fact that the last time we were this high in the dollar index, soft red wheat was $2 cheaper than it is right now. And I think more probably in terms of real time analysis and supply demand, is we just got the USDA's update on agricultural trade outlook just yesterday. And I found it really neat because they came in and cut their estimates on volume for wheat by 1.7 million tons versus what they gave us in August. And that's a 7% decline. Meanwhile, they came in and raised the corn by 2 million tons, and that was an increase of 3.3 million tons. So they see, I think, the same thing that we traditionally see when we see this type of set up in the market. And, you know, you can't get away from the fact that our market year-to-date inspections on wheat are still down, you know, 15.5%, and that's going to be difficult to increase. So the big thing I think that the hedger and the wheat trader need to understand right now, that's kind of become more clear to me, is that, yeah, we're probably rationing demand, but does it mean that we've rationed enough demand because the supply is still a moving target? And I think that's a big contrast to what we're dealing with in the bean market, especially in South America. So we really, you haven't nailed down the supply yet. And I think to Bill's point, in Hutchinson, Kansas, the heart of cattle feeding country, this past August, you know, we were trading 75 cents under in hard red wheat minus cash corn. Now we're 15 over, and we've got very dry conditions in winter wheat country from Kansas into Oklahoma and all the way into Texas. And the client in West Texas told me it's about the driest he's seen it for quite some time. So I think the biggest thing to watch in the wheat now is the good to excellent conditions in Kansas. They're at 44%. That seems low, but it's pretty good compared to last year's 29%.
So I'm going to pull each of you real quickly. Are you friendly to bullish the wheat market or something else? Mike?
I wrote to clients on Wednesday that I could see a technical breakout, fundamental breakout in the hard red wheat to $9. That may give us a $9-ish price in soft red wheat as well, but this is a level to hedge, because I think the key point that I'm trying to make is, like last year, we're going to have to rely a lot more upon the supply side, the weather side, to get our prices as profitable as we can, because of the dollar and because, like I said, the uncertainty with China.
I think that the short-term situation is still friendly, just from the perception of what's happening. If we start to perceive that available wheat stocks are going to decline more, it's going to shift those world buyers around, and that's going to create a little bit of energy. But to the point that was just made, we're probably in the big picture with, you know, wheat being harvested 10 months out of the year, we're probably in the last leg of this bull market. Now, inflation could accelerate it, and it could go further than any of us here could imagine. But bottom line is, from a hedging producer standpoint, where you're supposed to look at profitability, that's what we're farming for profit. We're not farming for price. We need to be really smart about this market.
The fundamentals are friendly. I mean, even the technicals, but I mean, it seems like this move this week has really been accelerated. You know, I think, you know, this move above these 2014 highs, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, you could see a setback and you're going to see increased volatility in here. But I mean, you can see a setback to the $8, which is a, you know, a 50 cent correction, and really not damage the chart any. But you know, it seems the last 2-3 weeks in this Kansas City chart has really accelerated. So the fact of the matter is, I mean, yes, it's friendly. I mean, you know, the statement about harvest 10 months out of the year, and here we are in the middle of harvest, you know, the middle of the Australian harvest, and we've got a forecast that's you know, it's going to, and perhaps this is something to hit on too, is it's going to increase the amount of feed wheat that's going to be available, and what impacts that may have on corn demand potentially into Southeast Asia. But you know, the fact that this is happening right in the middle of harvest, when typically this should be a time where a lid or a natural seller should be developing, the market's, you know, it's jittery, and it's got us right to be excited about things. But you know, the charts just in the last 2-3 weeks seem like they're a little bit overdone to me. But, you know, we can see a correction and still maintain the uptrend.
We'll come back to corn in just a bit. Mike Zuzulo, you did mention soybeans. Actually, I think most of you have mentioned soybean in one way or another. There is a very large South American crop on horizon, if they're able to bring all of it in good shape. And it appears that's the case so far. What can you tell us about the condition of that crop and what it means to the overall marketplace?
It certainly, I think, improved over the last 30 to 45 days, especially in some key areas of southern Brazil and especially in the Pampas region of Argentina, Todd. I think there's still a little bit of issues around, but you know, it's just nowhere near, in my opinion anyway, the other guys may feel differently, but it's just nowhere near where we were last year at this time. We're 85% planted in Brazil crops now. And, you know, we were struggling last year at this time. You know, a lot of people, I think, bought into the idea that La Nina was going to be very strong in South America. And so I think we've had some extra length in this market already built into the futures price that I'm concerned that will come out if we don't see a return of some real weather issues in some key growing regions of either Brazil or Argentina. And as we get into January and early February. So I continue to think that the corn and wheat will try and prop up the soybeans unless the meal comes in, which, you know, meal was just given a huge gift when it came to the lysine shortage and the lysine issue. And it was already too cheap to begin with, if you ask me, but that was just an extra boon of demand here that it's been given. And so I'm really watching the meal, and obviously I'm watching the soybean oil. Downside objectives are in soybean oil may not be that great here the next couple months. But I think as you get closer to the Jan-Feb time period, you're going to need to rely upon weather to keep these prices at this elevated level.
Bill Biederman, your view of soybean?
Well, I think, Todd, it's going to be product driven. I mean, we were product driven in the first part of this marketing year, all the right through harvest, with the oil premium getting pushed based on the renewable fuel trend and craze. And then when the lysine issue hit, that, you know, shot the meal up. I mean, processor margins are really phenomenal. Domestic demand for soybeans is going to continue strong, and basis is showing us that. And even now, where you've had a lot of crush plants bought out ahead, they're still buying and filling in that next 30 days as fast as they can. I don't think that's going to change. If we get some Chinese buying, I think that's going to help us out too. Now, having said all that, and that sounded really bullish, we're at a price level where, you know, you can make some darn good money selling beans at these prices. I don't think farmers have as much inventory out there as they do corn, but these are good prices.
Are you thinking for 2022 as well?
As a company, we're about 50% sold now. About 20% of that is either in a futures or in an HTA, and then the other 30% is in an option with a $14 ceiling price, actually. So we're pretty happy with it. We've got a $12.50-ish kind of floor. We're hedged up a little bit on this 22 crop because all of our studies that we've done on fertilizer and input costs compared to history suggest a very sizable shift in acres, which we don't think the industry can afford. That means to us that the market is going to correct and make sure that farm behavior maintains a level of corn acres and don't shift too many to beans. That can happen two ways, Todd. That can mean the corn market goes up or the bean market goes down, and we're not going to give up $12.50 opportunity.
Garrett Toy, you've heard the other two talk a little bit about soybean. There's just an awful lot of that crop potentially around eventually. And even in the United States, yields have been good. Where do you stand and what are your expectations?
Well, I think the bean market right now is kind of an area of self-reflection. You know, a lot of the people I've talked to who trade markets were looking to the soybean market being the short leg of whatever trade they were planning on doing. And then we just had a, you know, 75-cent dollar rally in flat price. I think that we're kind of sitting here and reevaluating. As far as the next flat price move, it's either going to be a weather situation in South America or South American harvest, where the natural order flow of the South American farmers selling hitting the market. But I think the, you know, lysine story, I mean, it could be a combination. I don't think the lysine shortage was what's causing the short-term issues. I mean, that's more of a longer-term demand issue as far as the shift into feed rations of meal. But the long-term story still remains renewable diesel. You have to think about the market perspective from only a month or two ago, that, you know, we needed to crush for oil largely, and that we were basically at some point going to have to give away meal essentially in order to get rid of it because of the renewable diesel story. Well, and then the lysine and in reality, some of it is the reduced yields and harvest delays in the eastern corn because of rains, and inability of crushers to be able to originate out there. That's kind of, supported the meal markets along with just general plant issues here and there. But I still agree. I mean, we may just sit here and around here for, 15 to 30 to 45 days. But, I think the market's still bearish, the bean market, soy complex. But, it's tough to be that bearish, as Bill mentioned, that when you've got $2.50 to $3 a bushel cash crush margins out here in Illinois, which were the best that we had at any point last year from May to August. So, there is demand out here, but the S&D on paper is growing. But the counterpoint to that is that this export window is closing here pretty quick. 5 weeks from now, there's going to be South American beans available. And at that point, the crushers are going to have very little competition as far as trying to originate things.
Todd, one thing that Garrett said that made me think about the bean oil side of the equation is it seems like that one of the reasons to me that the wheat has accelerated like he's talked about, and one of the reasons why the bean oil has held up so well, other than this new news about India buying on Wednesday and this new trade agreement we maybe have bilaterally, is the energy market. And I think this is where I had a client call me today and say, can, if wheat and corn continue to go higher, can beans go up with it, or will the beans start to go, negative at some point? And I think this is where I think we're in a time period where if the energy markets are still strong and, opening up that SPR, it seems to me that even with that SPR being opened up, if corn and wheat want to keep going higher, the beans aren't going to fight it for a time. So that's one of the things that the energy sector has really come in and helped us and brought some support to this market, especially I think with those commodity funds that are passive funds or the index funds, something we didn't see except back in like 2007, 2008.
Let's move crude oil into the mix, as you mentioned already, opening that up. The Biden administration adding about 2.8 days worth, I think, of crude oil to the U.S. supply this week. Bill Biederman, will it make much of a difference? And maybe you can turn that through with the inflation that they're trying to battle.
Well, obviously that this was a political event to make things, look good on the stage. In reality, Todd, I mean, what we did alone means absolutely nothing is in numbers. The combination of, approaching Japan and India and South Korea and I can't remember who else, that was a little bit more significant from a perspective trade psychology. In the big picture, OPEC's going to cut back a little bit. So in reality, this energy market, there's plenty of supply in the world, but that supply is not going to be available at a lower price. It's only going to be available at a higher price. And that's the perception of the supplier, and that's what they're going to stick with. So any sell-off, I think, is going to find really good support, at least between now and February.
Garrett Toy, does that mean ethanol demand, which has been very, very good, will continue to be that way? And will profitability stay so very good for the plants? I think it's increased three out of the last 3 weeks by, more than 10 cents a gallon.
Well, part of the issue is, it's logistics. I mean, you saw that kind of in the EIA report this week, had historically low East Coast stocks. We had build in the Midwest, and we had some build in the Gulf. Well, today they showed Gulf stocks lower and Midwest build, but a little bit better East Coast stocks. But as we sit here and we talk about the EPA and the arguments that ethanol is expensive, these logistics issues, ethanol isn't cheap. Chicago Argo traded, I think, $3.40 today. that's not cheap. So. But what that is doing is that inversion in the ethanol market is, creating, in the margin environment into the first quarter, where ethanol clients are locking in hot and heavy margins that they typically don't see in the first quarter. So if they can lock in margins, that means that there's going to be, the margins that they're locking in, there's going to be demand for corn, through the first quarter, and it should keep basis hot. The question is the farmer, who's delaying tax, delaying income in the first quarter, we should see a little bit more equilibrium there as far as deliveries and farmer movement, in my opinion. But no, I think the ethanol demand, it's here for the long haul as long as we can keep crude higher. But, these logistics issues are kind of shooting ourselves in the foot here a little bit, in my opinion. We can't really afford to have 340 Argo. I mean, if we can have that set back a little bit, that would definitely help, blending margins and perhaps appease the wolves of the EPA who are trying to negate the RFS altogether.
I'd like each of you, as we close out our time together, to talk about pricing strategies for old crop corn or corn that's in the bin at this point, whether that's at the elevator or at home. Mike Zuzlow, we'll start with you.
Todd, a happy Thanksgiving to you and the other fellows and all the listeners out there. First and foremost, I think starting the first 20% of 22 beans this week was a good decision, good recommendation. Scale up selling, being diversified is a good idea in 2022. One of the things that was on the highlight for me was about China. And I think between the geopolitics and their economy, their weather and their hog herd, it's going to be a lot more difficult to see clearly what their demand base is going to be in 2022, especially the second half of the year. So be ready for that and be prepared for that in your hedging. Cattle hedgers especially are getting up to $200+ a head returns now net. You only see that three times since January of 2002. So keep that in mind. We're getting profitable here, so lock in hedges.
Bill Biederman from agmarket.net.
Well, Todd, we're really big believers of keeping things flexible and locking in profits. And, if you can catch a $6 bid out there, there's nothing wrong with it. We're essentially 60% sold on the old crop, but, we'll never turn down $6 corn. For my own set of customers, we're approximately 30% bought back minimum with using options. So we have a lot less risk if the market drops. And if it goes up, we're still participating for about more than a dollar on the upside. Same in the beans. We're essentially done selling old crop beans with a portion of that bought back with options. And we're getting started, as I mentioned, with the 2022 crop. We feel very confident that we can make money at $12.50 beans. And we're comfortable staying open on most of the corn. We sold about 10% of the new crop corn just to have something on the books. It's a good starting point. Price up here at the $5.50 area. So, you just can't go wrong. Watch your profit margins, keep track of your costs, and just manage profit.
And Garrett Toy.
I think from the standpoint is I think even without an issue in South America, the beans, the soy complex remains the most bearish of the three, has the bearish potential, but it's, on the rising tide lifts all ships. I think between the demand for feed grains, it could potentially keep things supported, but if there's going to be a proverbial whoosh out there, it'll come from soybeans. I do think we're in a demand market in the corn market. From our standpoint, we're 60-75% sold on old crop and protected on about 15% in corn. Beans, we just made some more sales here this week, and we're pushing 75% on old crop corn. Old crop beans rather. We tend to try to, we move a lot of cash beans through harvest and do not tend to carry them, but have re-ownership strategies in place. So, I do think we're in a demand market and China remains the X factor, and I do believe that, being smart buyers, the big question mark is whether they're going to return to the U.S. corn market. And I do think they will just by what they're doing in Ukraine. Ukraine's a cheaper option right now, and they're buying Ukraine corn hand over fist, even though the Ukraine crop just added another 2 to 3 million metric ton that'll potentially steal demand away from the U.S. just on the bigger crop size. So 2022, we've got a lot to be thankful for in 2021, but 2022 looks to be an interesting year for sure.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may hear the whole of the program online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. We'd like to thank our panelists, including Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net, Garrett Toy at AgTraderTalk.com, and Mike Zuzulo from GlobalComResearch.com. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.